even if you're writing first-person narratives for publications, you're rarely sharing a whole lot about your own journey, or just, you know, the very deeply personal things about my relationship with my partner, traveling while gay, these sort of things were, you know, scary to put on paper. Yeah. Even my own mother was like, I learned a lot about you reading this book.
Oh, yeah.
Just letting yourself be vulnerable, that was the scariest part.
Welcome to Jump Podcast. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and experience the world outside your comfort zone and to do big, courageous things with your one life. Let this show be a source of advice and inspiration, and remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. All right. Thanks for tuning in today, wherever you are across the world. Actually, just at the time of this recording, just got back from 5 incredible weeks in New Zealand with a Jump Adventures trip. Absolutely mind-blowing. More on that probably coming later, but I'm back in my studio, which is a fancy name for my desk at a window in Montana for the time being. And I'm happy to be here because today we are doing something we haven't done before. On this podcast, I have a friend from the travel industry who is a writer and longtime journalist for some of the biggest publications that you know of in travel. His name is Mark Johansson, and I met him several years ago through our adventure travel conferences that we both attend. And while we were both in Panama just a couple months ago, I found out that Mark has just recently published his first book. It's called Mars on Earth, Wanderings in the World's Driest Desert. And two things came to my mind immediately. One, I must read this book for many reasons, but mostly because A, Mark wrote it, and B, it's about the Atacama Desert in Chile. And we all know how I feel about Chile around here. And the other thing that came to mind was, what if I read it and invite Mark to come chat about it on the podcast with me? So we put things in motion. I got my copy of the beautiful book and somehow managed to read it in the last month, even while adventuring through New Zealand. And Mark has graciously agreed to join us here on the podcast to help bring his writing and his story to life for us, which goes way beyond the Atacama Desert, by the way. And he's actually here with me right now. I have an opportunity for you to join me in real life for some real travel. Here's the latest Jump Adventures update. We are going to Greece for a bike and boat island hopping adventure this May 9th to 16th, 2025, and we still have space left. Check out jumpadventures.com to learn more and book now. We're going to have a yacht all to ourselves with ensuite cabins on board, so you get to sleep in the same bed every night as we start in Athens and make our way west toward the island of Corfu. You'll have your own bike for the week, e-bike if you want one, for cycling the islands as we go, in between meals crafted by our private chef on board, and all the relaxing you want to do on the top deck under the Mediterranean sun. These bike and boat adventures are our most carefree and relaxed trips. All you have to do is say yes and show up, and there's still space. Head over to jumpadventures.com to grab your spot now, and we'll see you there. So, Mark, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for taking the time to be here.
Yeah, hey, Jackie. It's so nice to be here with you today. Thanks so much for having me on.
Of course. I've actually been following you on Instagram for a long time now, and because your path just fascinates me. And of course, where you live fascinates me too. So maybe before we get into the subject matter of today, why don't you take a few to sort of catch our listeners up on who you are and where you come from and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. It's funny because that story does kind of take me back to New Zealand where you're just coming from. But so I was born in the Washington, D.C. area. I grew up there. Haven't really lived in the U.S. much at all since I've been an adult. After graduating from university, I moved to New York for a bit, but then to the Virgin Islands, and then eventually to New Zealand, where I ended up meeting my Chilean partner, which sort of took my life in a bunch of different directions. We spent the next couple of years backpacking around Asia together and eventually moved to Australia and then now to Santiago in Chile, where I've lived for the past 10 years. For about 15 years now, I've been writing about travel and been a travel journalist. mostly about adventure and the environment and the nexus of those two things, as well as food and architecture and things along the edge of that. Since I'm based here in Chile, which I know is one of your favorite places, Jackie, I do write a lot about Latin America. That's been a big focus. And yeah, as you said, I write for some big publications like National Geographic and Travel and Leisure and Food and Wine, BBC, CNN. And I also write guidebooks for Lonely Planet about the Americas and Southeast Asia. So that's a little bit about me.
Just a little bit. And I know just from personal experience, because my path is sort of similar, just how much actually went into everything you just said in like 2 minutes. Like your life has been so full and so colorful and so just stretched with stories and experiences. And let's do this first so that the people listening can go ahead and get on Instagram and find you there. Where can people find you on Instagram?
Mark on the map. M-A-R-K on the map. Yeah, that's it.
And your website and anywhere else that you are?
My website's just my name, markjohansson.com. I'm also on Twitter, X, also Mark on the Map, and Blue Sky, Mark on the Map as well.
Okay, sweet. And this, if I don't know if we're going to have a video version of this, but I have your book right here. It's gorgeous. Yeah. It's really gorgeous. They did a really good job with the cover, and just like the whole presentation is so beautiful. Congratulations. Cause it's a big deal. That's a really big deal.
Long process for sure. And I am happy how it turned out too. I think those colors just really pop and bring me back to the desert as well.
Yeah, well said. Speaking of, this book kind of begins at kind of a tumultuous time, to say the least. I actually was there in Chile when this happened too, the uprising. Yeah. I was leading a trip in Aysén. So it was different because it was, you know, we were a little bit removed, farther away. We definitely saw some of the effects of this social uprising that happened down there. But, what about that moment was it that kind of pushed you to say, I need to do something? Like, what was the real impetus of the feeling of like, I need to get out of here. I'm in the city. Let's go. Let's get out.
Sure. Yeah. So the book actually begins, as you know, with me on a rooftop of a really fancy hotel drinking champagne as this huge social uprising unfolds and people are demanding that the society be more equal, and just the juxtaposition of that really opened my eyes that I didn't understand the country that I was living in. I had been living in Chile at that point for 5 years, and this was 2019, October of 2019, and all of a sudden the city was just going up in flames. 52 metro stations were on fire by the end of that first night. People were out on the streets marching. The government ended up putting the military back out on the streets to control all the unrest. But this was the first time that the military was back out on the streets since the end of the military dictatorship in the country. So it was a really shocking moment for especially the older generation here to see. And so just to live through that kind of experience made me realize, wow, like I really don't understand where I'm living. I didn't see this coming. I was sitting there on a rooftop drinking champagne while it started. Mm. Like, what does that say about me? What does that say about what I still have to learn if I am going to make this place my home? Because a month before that happened, I just bought an apartment in Chile. So I was really planting roots. And then all of a sudden, it was like, boom. You know, and then that segued into the pandemic. And just, you know, you had a lot of time to think and stew. And I started dreaming about the Atacama at that point. You know, people were making sourdough breads or cocktail recipes. My mind was like, oh. Where can I go? Where can I go that will open my mind and help me understand this country a little bit better? Mm.
Incredible. Yeah. I mean, I commend you for that because honestly, I think most people are in that boat. They don't know where they live or their place in it, even like in history, you know, like in a, on a timeline, where even are we? Why are the things happening now? How connected are they to the past? I mean, you really brought so much of that to life in your book, which made me think, I mean, just seeing you go through it in Chile is like, this is so interesting because you're not even from there. You're originally from the US, which has a whole host of its own stuff going on, right? And so I feel like on a kind of a related level that this is a worthy pursuit of for anyone to do, to dig into where they are, but it also makes, as a traveler who's done a lot of solo travel too, I also understand that, and you really, really brought this to life in your book, where you are and where you're traveling really depends on who you are and where you are in your own life. I mean, for example, you and I could both go to the same exact place and have entirely different experiences. Say we're on the same trip, you know, but our experiences are going to be so different because of who you're with. And generally that's yourself, you know, that's what I mean, like where you are at that time. And so it's super interesting to actually see it come to life through your words, because it's something I've lived a lot as a solo traveler and just sort of, you know, getting to know yourself through the place that you're in. But I am just fascinated that you decided to take this journey into the Atacama to try. I mean, I know in the end, really, it's not just about Chile. It's about your partnership. It's about getting to know what you've signed up for, which I think is just so important. So many people just don't do this, even in the countries we're from. Like, good for you for even going there.
Well, yeah, I think to your point, a lot of it was in one, to understand the country that I live in better, but it's also, you know, I'm dating somebody from another country. I've been together with somebody from another country for 15 years. So how can you really understand your partner if you don't understand the place that they're from? So
yeah,
I think that was a big part of why I set off on this journey as well.
Yeah, massive. Yeah. I love it. Okay. I would like to read some excerpts from your book back to you, because this all kind of...
I'm ready for it.
Is this the first time this has been done
for
you?
First time somebody's back to me, yeah. I'm excited.
Oh, what an honor. Okay. So I have several, but we're going to start with three little parts that kind of tie into what we're talking about. And one of them is straight from the prologue. I love how you set this up as like, you had to explain first why the Atacama, why you called it Mars on Earth, like why the Atacama is referred to sometimes as Mars, and because it's so set apart. And you really, really went out there to go and discover all these things. I think it's so cool. So this is from the prologue. It's becoming clearer to me now how deserts distort reality. I feel it creeping up on me. I catch myself filling empty spaces with memories. I'm stuffing voids with thoughts. A forest might soothe my mind. This desert lights it on fire. Of course, that's exactly what I came for. When I set off into the Atacama, I felt like I was losing my sense of self, unsure how life had deposited me in my current geography. I needed to get out, at least for a while, and I wanted one of those lawless spots, a place in the in-between, where the sureties of a predictable city life disappear alongside its burdens. I wanted overpowering landscapes, visual provocations, a Mars on Earth. And here I am, in the driest of dry dwelling places, alone, on a journey more consequential than I could have imagined at the start. So good.
Thanks for reading it back.
I love it. Yeah. Your writing is super inspiring for me. I love the style of how you did this book.
Oh, thanks, Jack.
Okay.
But yeah, that's something I come back to a lot. The whole... idea of how a forest will calm your mind and a desert kind of lights it on fire and opens you up to this big thinking and sort of slaps you in the face and forces you to really be in the moment, be present and embrace whatever comes your way, you know, in a way that a forest really just could make me have a nap and be a happy person, which is a lovely thing too, but it wasn't the objective of this book.
Right, right. A forest is cozy for sure.
I love a forest. Don't get me wrong. I love a forest. Yeah.
You go forest bathing in a forest. I don't think they do desert bathing. Not yet, at least.
No, there's probably a good reason too.
There's probably a good reason. Yeah, but it's also interesting because your world, during the, we all know during the pandemic, but then put on top of that, the whole turmoil in Chile, your world was kind of on fire. And so to go to a place so harsh is really brave at that time. Cause I think a lot of people would have sought the forest. Give me something that feels good. And here's Mark. I'm going to go off by myself into Mars. What you got for me? Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. This one's from chapter 2. This is when you're first starting on your trip. Okay. I suddenly feel incredibly nervous, as if my true purpose in the Elqui Valley has been exposed right from the start. I've come to this arid outpost not only as a baby step into the Atacama. I want to understand the kind of people who are drawn into a desert and what this landscape does to their minds. I'm hoping also for something of a leap outside myself, a mental hop into the mindset of people much freer than I'll ever be.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was going to say, you realize you're one of these people who are drawn to the desert, right?
Yeah, we're weird people. You know, and I think in that chapter, that's what I tried to explore, how deserts sort of absorb outsiders and outcasts and weirdos, and why I'm fascinated by these kind of places as well, because, you know, it's a place that does get to you. It makes you a little crazy. And then that's fun sometimes. Why we do drugs. Some people do drugs. Some people get really drunk. You know, you want to escape your mind a bit. But I think a desert can do that without drugs or alcohol. It just does it naturally.
Mm-hmm. No kidding. And the people that you got to meet, you did a really good job at just diving in and getting to know these people and sharing their stories and making it, well, I'll use an idea that you said multiple times, is there's so much life in the desert, even though it appears so inhospitable. You found the life in so many ways.
Yeah, I think that's the misconception people have a lot of times about deserts, is that they're just empty and wastelands and places that are not worthy of our time or attention or even protection in terms of national parks and things like that. And through this book, I hope to try and, you know, change people's minds a little bit, help them see that deserts are worthy of our time and attention and protection, and are the kind of places that have stories that aren't always told, and have people living in them. You know, this desert in particular has more than 1 million people living in it. It's not this empty, I mean, it has very empty parts of it, but there's big cities along the coast. So there was a lot of people to find, a lot of stories to tell, a lot of animals to run into.
Vicuñas.
Vicuñas, yeah.
All right, here's one from chapter 4. And then we'll kind of dig a little bit more into these ideas. But, okay. I'm fast realizing something that should have been obvious from the outset. The Atacama is no place for humans. It's freakishly unforgiving. But if I've learned anything about myself in these past years, it's that I nihilistically seek out uncomfortable places because they're so often the most complicated and fascinating on earth, the ones that make you feel something deep down at your core. When I told friends in Santiago about my plans to travel the entire Atacama, many had strong opinions about why it was a bad idea. There's nothing in the desert, they said. The cities are ugly. The people are tacky. How many weeks? You'll go mad. I told them that was the point. I wanted landscapes like this that would make me mad. People who would defy stereotypes and places where I could reconsider what's considered ugly. I also wanted to prove to them that they were just parroting words passed down by others who, like so many from the comfortable world, harbor unconscious fears about the places they can't understand. Ooh. I love that though, because you're right. You,
I mean, you must feel the same way from your travels. Mm-hmm. You go to a lot of these places as well, you know?
Yeah, I do. And
for people like us who have traveled as much as we have, you get tired of going to the bucket list places, the really pretty, obviously wonderful places that everyone else is going to. And you start seeking out places like this. I don't know. I know that has, I'm sure, happened to you as well.
And it happens in places you wouldn't even think of, you know, I mean, on a long haul bus somewhere, like it doesn't matter where you are. This is the beauty and the horror of solo travel, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
I always say that solo travel is like a mirror. because you are left with nothing but yourself to interpret and understand what's happening around you, what you're going through, to talk to yourself, all of the above. And you on this journey completely just jumped in with both feet and went to a place that, I mean, most people don't even go, let alone alone, you know? And, so I would like to know about the mark that you saw and the mark that you found, reflected back at you in the desert, because whoa.
Ooh, that's a tough question. Yeah, I don't know. The desert certainly gave me a lot of time for self-reflection, which, you know, fleshes out in the book as you read. You know, there's strong memoir elements of it, as you've mm-hmm. alluded to in these passages you're reading. And I think it just gave me the time and space to reflect on how life had led me to where I've been living, how life had, as you said in the first quote, deposited me in my current geography. You know, how did I end up in Chile? How did I end up with my partner here? How did my life take me here? And am I happy where I am? Do I feel a sense of belonging? Can you really ever feel a sense of belonging in a country that's not the one you grew up in? I think for anyone who's lived outside of their own country for a while, it forces you to ask those sort of questions after a certain amount of time, because you are always sort of a bit of an outsider. And maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe that's something to embrace as well. But those are the sort of things that I suppose I was grappling with personally in the desert. I would say that a lot of the journey was also just listening, trying to listen to all the people that I met along the way, learn from them, chat with them, humanize the desert a little bit more, and give a voice to people that are not always often heard. You know, so as much as the book is about me, I also hope that it's about them as well.
It definitely is. But, you know, I will say, like, I learned a lot. I learned so much from reading this book. It was super interesting there's so many tidbits and so many random things that you throw in there. That's just like, wait, what? Really? Like, that exists down there? I mean, wild. The whole like fast fashion pyramid of clothing, the hand in the desert, the mummies. Holy goodness.
World's oldest mummies. Yeah.
Blown. Yeah. World's oldest mummies. The salt flats, the pools, everything. There's like so many random things that you throw in there. However, I will say that I think the part, and I would imagine this would be true for most people reading, as this is kind of what happens with memoirs, but the part that really fascinated me the most was your story. Like when you would kind of just take it and just run with it. And like, because this is what happens when we go to play anytime. I mean, I guess any travelers, even if you are with a group, whatever, when you travel, you see yourself, you know, you start to learn, you start to observe, and you start to see yourself in your environment and your inner environment, you know, reflected in what's around you and what's really going on. And that's the part that's relatable. What'd you say?
It's scary to put that on paper sometimes. I would say not the part that I didn't really set out to write a memoir. First of all, that's something that kind of happened accidentally along the way. My literary agent kept pushing me to put more and more of myself into this, to the point where turned out as you read it. But I guess it helps, you know, it helps give the reader a narrator to follow throughout this journey, and somebody to provide the lens from which to understand a foreign landscape, I suppose.
Yeah. Or any landscape, really. Hmm. And you did a really good job with it. Like, I just think it's really hard to express what's happening inside and, you know, upstairs when you're going through an experience. But that is what makes it that's what makes it powerful, you know, and memorable is who you bring to it. So it's like the Atacama maybe was your stage, but I think this book was about Mark. Like, this book is about you and your story. And I'm so glad that your people pushed you to do that, because it turned out to be definitely a memoir, and I think it's great. Like, you should write more of them.
Scary and very vulnerable to do that, but I'm glad it worked for you.
Yeah. What was the scariest part of this?
Just sharing so much of myself. You know, I think as a journalist, even if you're writing first person narratives for publications, you're rarely sharing a whole lot about your own journey or just, you know, the very deeply personal things about my relationship with my partner, traveling while gay, these sort of things were, you know, scary to put on paper. Yeah. There, even my own mother was like, I learned a lot about you reading this book.
Yeah.
Just letting yourself be vulnerable. That was the scariest part.
It is scary, but it's also, I would say it's probably the most rewarding because that's where people are going to say, hey, Mark, like, I see myself in this, you know, this is me too, or this is, I've been there, you know, and that's where you sort of started to, like, these people just come out of the woodworks and you're like, oh, I'm not alone. Like, this is just a human experience, you know, against a crazy backdrop.
I hope so. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to read a couple more. So these ones. Okay. This is chapter 6. You stayed with Sandra and Carlos for like a month almost, right?
Yeah, 3 weeks. Yeah.
3 weeks. Okay. And he did a coca leaf reading for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this kind of picks up in the middle of that, actually. Okay. This is when you're waiting. We're waiting for him to say something. Carlos is silent for well over a minute, chewing on a wad of coca leaves that puff his cheeks out to such a degree that he resembles a chipmunk with an acorn. I break the hush to ask him about this trip in the Atacama, about my crippling doubts about whether the experiences I've had and realizations I've come to will add up to anything. He tells me to think of my journey in Chile as some inner animal that needs time to grow in its form. I should nurture the animal and shape it and make sure it has a solid foundation, he explains. Then, with great prudence, I can release this metaphorical creature from my mind and let it steer me onward, either down familiar roads or in the direction of paths unknown. I ask him what to make of this. A twist of fate brought me to a country that I couldn't have pinpointed on a map until I met a stranger in New Zealand a decade ago. How do you find meaning in that? Is Chile the known road or the path unknown? He says I've traveled a lot over the years, but that my life got split in two when I arrived in this country. I've spent 7 years going down the same path, and if I stay another 7 years, I'll keep heading down it. Change has been a constant in my life, he continues. So what a change it might be if I enjoyed a bit of stability. What's the harm in spending time appreciating what you have around you and not looking for the next thing? There may not be major milestones or grand surprises in the years ahead, but there will be a rhythm to my life if I choose this path. I might, in staying, he says, find a better sense of belonging. Hmm. I find that one so interesting, and it kind of hits because, I mean, it hits home because as a traveler, you know, we are often looking for the next thing. We're constantly, we're needing that. It's like a hit of dopamine, whatever it is. Like there's something that we just get from it that has defined, in your case and in mine, our adult lives. You know, it's just part of who we are. It's our lifestyle. It's long-term. It's not on a whim. It's just what we've built our entire foundation on. And so,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, like, for me, I'd never lived in any country for more than 18 months as an adult before I moved to Chile. And so that's when I lived here 7 years, and it was just like, whoa, what? I don't know who I am when I'm standing still. Like, I'm a kind of person who defines myself, like a lot of long-term travelers do, I think, by where we are, what we're doing, not the place we go back to that we call home. Mm-hmm. So, that's sort of the feeling I'm grappling with in that particular passage.
Yeah. It's almost like a reckoning too. I mean, becoming still when you're used to traveling. And I know that the pandemic did that for a lot of us unwillingly. But it's such an interesting idea to be forced into. Well, you actually chose it. I said forced because pandemic, you know, you're stuck within your borders. You got to go to the Atacama, which is cool. But you also mentioned, and you've mentioned it already in this podcast, and then I just read about it in that passage, was a sense of belonging. And that is something that is really hard to grapple with, I think, when you feel like, maybe you feel like this, when you feel like you belong everywhere, it's where you're meant to be, is just anywhere and everywhere. Like that's, I'm here, this is me, I'm, you know, I'm home. I've grappled a lot with what what the idea of home even is.
Yeah, I think as a traveler, you're always kind of trying to be a chameleon just so you can fit in and not fit in, but like make yourself comfortable no matter where you land, where you go. You're going to be comfortable on that hiking trail. You're going to be comfortable in that city. You're going to be comfortable the second you land. You're going to know what to do because you try to make yourself sort of a citizen of the world. But how do you find a sense of belonging where you actually go home to every time? I think that's a bit more difficult.
It is so hard. Having just returned from an absolutely mind-blowing trip, I'm like, wait, what am I doing here again?
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if you have, do you have like a definition of home, what home means to you? Because I do. And I'm wondering, we have so much in common actually with this whole like moving foundation of travel and adult life abroad. I'm wondering if you've ever thought about that and what you have.
For me, home is usually just wherever my partner is when we're together. That feels like home because he's the one constant in my life. Everything else is just like a hurricane spinning around me, it feels like sometimes. And so the one constant thing that I have is him. And so if I'm with him, I feel like home. It doesn't even have to be in my physical home. Just when we're together, I feel like that's home. That's kind of how I define it.
I love that. I think that's I think that just for my part, since I asked you, I'll answer a little bit too, just to share out loud. Because I don't think it's a place. It's not any one place. I think it's more of a heart set, you know? Because I think we are allowed to feel at home with a person, in a place, on our own, with an activity, whatever it is that kind of just lights us up and makes us feel like everything's right in the world. Like those glimpses of just starry moments that, can happen anywhere at any time. And I like to think that can be home because you can find it everywhere. You can take it with you. It doesn't have to be something that you return to or defined by walls or a 401k. You know, it's anywhere you choose to adventure. And I think you probably found a home in the Atacama.
Yeah, in some strange way, yes.
All right, I have another passage here. This one's from chapter 7. And this is when, so you're telling a little bit about your story with Felipe, how you guys met. And and it actually is just about what we were talking about. But you said, we ran so far away from the life I knew that by the time we arrived at the airport in Delhi, 6 months later, all I knew was that there was no turning back. So we kept running, first to Australia, then to Chile. For Felipe, it was a homecoming. For me, it was a whole new marathon. That is, until it wasn't. 7 years later, I'm still here. I've stopped running and I'm not sure who I am when I'm staying still.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just talking about.
Yeah, I know. It's tough, but you've, even through this experience in the Atacama, you've decided to stay. Obviously, you're still there.
Yeah, the book felt like a form of therapy in a way, you know, just to put it all on paper. And as I say, I think in the epilogue, it sort of gave me the time and space to find the reasons to stay, because I was kind of ready to end this chapter of my life, as I talk about at the end of the book. But through this journey, you know, just it tied me even deeper. The roots dug deeper. I felt myself more connected to this country. And I realized the ways that this country had already changed me. So yeah, I am not saying that it's necessarily my forever home, but it's definitely the place I will keep coming back to for now.
For now. That's good enough.
That's good enough,
you know,
right?
People always ask me, oh, how long are you going to do that? How long are you going to do this? I'm like, first of all, these are impossible questions. Like, just think about human existence. Yeah. Why do you even ask that question? Like, none of us really know. But my answer is always the same. And it is as long as it feels right. Because as long as it feels right, I think it's the right thing, you know? And when that changes, guess what? We're going to change. We're going to change our minds. We're going to change our hearts. We're going to change our place of living, perhaps, like whatever it is. And that's okay. This is our existence. This is our prerogative to, you know, explore and figure out exactly what that means. And I'm really proud of you as a traveler. Like, I can't imagine. I mean, I guess I've chosen Montana for my my coming back to home.
How long have you been there?
Well, the first time I moved here was 20 years ago. But I've been, and it's the longest place I've lived. I'm putting that in quotes, stateside ever. But it's been so peppered with travel and long-term travel. I mean, I've been, I moved here in 04 and 08 and like again in 11. And then I left for 3 years, went nomadic and kind of came back. And then we had the pandemic, which was like perfect timing for me to have a home during the pandemic. But since then it's been, you know, I usually spend like 4 or 5 months a year abroad. So,
well, you know, I love that Tolkien quote, you know, not all those who wander are lost. And that's sort of where the, for example, the book, the subhead for the book is Wanderings in the World's Driest Desert. And it's not because for me, wanderings doesn't mean you're just like aimlessly meandering through a space. It's like you're very purposefully choosing to wander, to open yourself up to whatever you might find, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. To me, it does. Like
that's how you live your life, you know? You're purposefully wandering without considering yourself lost.
Exactly. It's all intentional. It's all research. It's all for research. Yeah.
Totally.
you brought up, you just said something that is a good segue into, you're putting roots down and kind of realizing how attached you are to your new country as an expat. Well, it's not new. You've been there for 10 years now, but there's something that made me laugh out loud that, that you wrote about that I'm going to go ahead and read. It's about a page long, but it's so funny. And I think it brings us full circle to you staying in Chile because of where you've kind of landed. But so this is from, I think this is the last chapter, chapter 9. This trip has made me realize that I'm becoming more Chilean, or at least less American, in subtle ways that creep up on me. Late one night after Felipe falls asleep, I sit outside under the altiplanic moonlight and make a list. I can no longer tolerate spicy food. I put avocado on everything. I linger at a table long after a meal. I drink tea in the afternoon. I use an electric kettle to make it. I shop at different places for bread, vegetables, and provisions. I purse my lips to point at things. That's so Chilean. So Chilean. Yes.
I totally do it now.
So good. I eat seasonally. I only buy what I really need. I accept that the customer isn't always right. I wake late. I go to bed late. I roll with the punches. I check in with my family more. I block out Sundays for Felipe's family. I dress in darker colors. I work longer hours and get less done. I say yes to plans even when yes means no. I show up for plans late and expect that others are expecting this. I expect to be confronted with the unexpected. I speak intentionally instead of inevitably. I prepare for the inevitability of bureaucracy. I learn when to throw up my hands. I worry less about the rules. I worry more about countries other than my own. I worry more in general. We're going to pause there and then I'm going to read the next paragraph because I find it adorable. Sure. But I love this list. There are so many things that we kind of, in fact, even in your writing, I noticed a couple things that made me pause because I was like, I don't know if that's how we would say it in English, but that was definitely Spanish. You know, like there was, I remember there was one thing where you said you were explaining something that was simultaneous and you said it was at once this and that. And I was like, at once. It works, but I think
even my English is all out of whack.
Yeah, like a la vez or whatever, you know, like it's at the, at once, it's both these things. But I don't know. I loved it though. Cause it got the linguist in me going. I was like, oh yeah, that's Spanish for sure. And then I read this part. And now I'm going to keep going. My English is all out of whack too. I find myself using phrases like, I'm fully booked to say I'm full, or copy paste to say you're copying me. Felipe said them so many times and I found them so cute that I didn't have the heart to tell him that they were wrong or at least not quite correct. So I simply adopted them as part of my vocabulary. That's so true. Cute.
Every night after we eat, I'd say I'm fully booked. I can't help it. Like, and I forget that it's not normal when I say it in front of other people. And they're like, Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are just the weird things. I think a lot of people who've lived abroad for a long period of time and who sort of live between two languages can relate to those sort of ways in which your languages meet in the middle in weird and strange ways sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. The weirdest and the strangest. I feel like I speak my own language sometimes because there's not just Spanish, but I've got like five different languages going on up there. And whatever comes out. And I just love when I'm with like one of my best friends or somebody who just gets it and I don't have to explain why that just came out, you know? It's just like this cozy language you've created that just kind of represents your life and your travels. And
or even, yeah, Felipe and I, when we first met, we were living in New Zealand, right? So we would go and cook things together and we started cooking capsicums and silver beets. And so I started using those words instead of bell peppers or chard, you know, to describe the groceries. And we never changed that because those were the words we used those first years together. And so now some of my vegetables are even not the right American English words, but new Kiwi English or Australian English words.
Yeah, so sure.
Things just get all like churned around in a pot and mixed up. And you can't figure yourself out anymore.
I think that is where a really good editor comes in for your book. It's like, yes. Help me make sense of this. Yeah. When I first really started traveling, like within the first 10 years, when I was learning all these different languages, I think my English was deteriorating and it made me a little bit sad as a writer. Cause here I am just like making mistakes and I was losing it. And it made me afraid because I want to write books, you know, like that's something that's
You should, I said.
I will. It's happening.
Did you hear that, listeners?
I know. I know. But it does worry me that my English is going to come across. You know what, though? I'm saying to myself, just own that shit. Like, I've earned that.
That is who you are now. Embrace it. That's how I feel. You know? Mm-hmm. My English isn't perfect anymore. That's just the way I've turned
That's what a life of travel and living abroad and speaking another language, that's what it does to you. And it's actually, it's rare and a beautiful thing.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's that uncommon either. I have a lot of friends who've lived around the world and they have some really weird English as well. They speak in weird in between accents and, you know, and we're all like in this weird in between world where it doesn't matter how your English sounds, if it sounds too American, too British, too Aussie, too something in the middle, you know, who cares? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. It's actually kind of endearing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We like it.
Yeah. It tells a story.
Okay. We're going to sort of wrap up, but this is where I might challenge you with a few questions for advice. And maybe we'll do kind of different approaches on these. First of all, how about from the side of you as an expat who, I mean, I imagine you feel a bit like a third culture kid now, you know, because you've spent so much time outside of your own country that maybe you don't even belong there anymore. And yet you're new in your new country and you've spent all this time in between. Do you have any Mark-inspired advice for expats out there who might be struggling also with belonging or just travelers who might be struggling with that piece?
Yeah, I think it's just important to find community wherever you are. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. Because I think those sort of struggles get accelerated or sort of blow up and become bigger in your mind when you're just alone stewing on them. But if you have a community of other people who are in a similar situation than you are, and not just, for example, not just like foreign expats that are living wherever you're living, I think it's very important that you also have a community of locals who perhaps have also lived abroad and bring that perspective back to their own country with them. So you're not just isolating yourself amongst foreigners, but you have a group of both foreigners and locals who have lived in the world and you have your own small community. I mean, I know that's what I found here in Chile. That's been very helpful to me.
Yeah, I think that's super important. And you bring up a really good point because And this is actually what I was referring to about the vulnerable side of your book as well, and people kind of coming out of the woodworks, is when you speak a thing, you realize you're not alone in it. I mean, other people are also in that sharing, in that, we'll call it suffering, if you will, or whatever it is, that experience. And I think that, you know, as soon as you sort of bring something to light, it becomes diminished. The darkness of it kind of just diminishes as you share it with other people. And that is why I'm going to encourage you to keep writing memoirs, because I don't think it's ever going to get less scary. But the vulnerability part is so powerful once you kind of open yourself up and share that, and bring that community in, because they're out there, you know, and they want to hear that. We need to hear that from each other. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then I feel like you sort of shared with us almost like an identity crisis, maybe not an identity crisis. Maybe that's not what it was, but like a where you are on your path sort of crisis. Like, what am I actually going through? And now that you have completed a journey into your own and learned from it, and I mean, it's never really over, right? It's all unending. However, you did a thing to sort of address a specific thing in your life. So from that angle, how, maybe what kind of advice would you give to someone who's also unsure about where they are on their path?
I think just to not be afraid of change. I mean, that's been the biggest constant in my life, and I think your life, and a lot of people like us who are willing to just jump up and go somewhere else. But for example, for me, this book was just a huge departure from what I normally do. This was a big risk, I guess, in a way, because I'd never written a book. I didn't know how to write a book. I didn't know how to get a literary agent. I didn't know how to get a publisher. I didn't know how to do any of that. But I'm really, I guess, proud and happy that I took that risk and accepted the challenge and got to where I am now 4 years later. And if I didn't challenge myself to do something new, try something new, take a risk, then I wouldn't have this book that you have on your desk right now, and people wouldn't be reading it. So I don't know. That sounds so simple, I guess, but that would be my advice.
Honestly, it doesn't though, because it takes a lot of courage to, insert here. I mean, to take a wandering through a desert, first of all, to write a book, to put yourself out there, to find answers to these sort of questions that we have in life. I mean, it takes a lot of courage, and you definitely took a giant leap by going and doing this big thing. And do you think that you learned, do you think that you earned, gained some courage muscles there, and that maybe you'll continue forward with another book or so?
Maybe. Yeah. Let's see. I mean, it's such early days with this book. It just came out in October. So yeah, just seeing how this process rolls out, doing some of the, you know, did some book talks in the US in December. So yeah, just I'm rolling through the process of getting a book out into the world before I even contemplate what might come next. But I like the idea of dreaming of what might come next. We'll see. We'll see.
It must be so hard to talk about this book, because I mean, I saw you talk about it when we were in Panama last month. And I mean, I think I left that session thinking, well, he mentions the hand, you know, like the giant hand in the desert. And I guess
it's not a book that I think you can make a really easy elevator pitch about.
It's totally not.
Yeah. Even my agent says that to me, like everyone said that. And so even I struggle sometimes to explain what the book is.
Well, and you mentioned in the book, that woman whose writing you came across, I think in a museum or something somewhere, that was like, you know, you think you have an idea for a story and then you start to tell it and it just takes its own path. And that's so true. And I mean, I think you really did a good job at tying in what was happening in your world to like what you were seeing in the desert. And I mean, it's wild because this book is, it has, you know, that book In Patagonia by Bruce Chatwin. It has In Patagonia vibes for me, because it's like the wanderings sort of journalistic style, except your memoir bit is way better in this book. It's like, oh, you really get to see like behind the lens, and then you end up with almost two stories because you've got so much that you're learning about the Atacama, but then it's like, oh wait, this is Mark's story, you know, and you've just kind of blended the two and made it work. But this is what happens in our lives. You know, I mean, we have what's happening outside of us and then we have what's happening inside of us. And it's really a collection of journeys of an external and an internal journey. And this is what you've done with your book. And well done.
It's a delicate balance trying to blend those two things. So I hope it, hope it worked out.
It did. I think it definitely did. All right. Well, is there anything else that you would like to add? Anything else that you want to put out there for Mars on Earth or for yourself?
No, just don't be afraid of deserts. You know, go explore, go to new places, go to the uncomfortable places like we talked about earlier. I mean, as I say in the book, I think there's some of the most, you know, exciting places that really touch you deep down at your core. So yeah, don't be afraid of the uncomfortable parts of our planet.
And don't be afraid to take the internal journey too, to those uncomfortable places, because that's exactly what happens. Don't be afraid of it. I love that. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's been so good to talk with you. Your book is truly so well written. It's inspiring for me. So thank you for putting it out into the world. Way to go. Yeah. Way to be courageous.
Thank you for having me here.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you guys out there want to get your hands on a copy of Mark's book, and I highly recommend that you do, Mark, where can they find it?
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, your local library, just wherever you normally find your books.
Cool. Mars on Earth. We'll put those links in the show notes too. So Mark, thank you again. And thank you guys for listening. Please go buy Mark's book and read it. Give him a follow on Instagram @MarkOnTheMap. And we'll see you guys back here in the next episode.